The Earth is a huge magnet spinning in space, surrounded by a magnetic field that's made up of invisible lines of force called lines of flux. These lines leave the surface of the Earth at the magnetic North Pole, travel out into space, curve around toward the equator, and re-enter at the magnetic South Pole. What you really need to know about the magnetic compass are its errors. Those errors are variation, deviation, and dip errors. Let's take a look at each of them. Deviation is a compass error that's caused by interference or disturbances from electrical and from metal components inside the aircraft. The correction for this error is displayed on a compass card placed near the compass itself. The two dip errors can be further broken down into northerly turning error and acceleration-deceleration error. If you're on a northerly heading and you make a turn to the right, which means you'd be turning to the east, the compass will momentarily indicate a turn to the west. Similarly, if you're on a northerly heading and you make a turn to the left or turn to the west, the compass will momentarily indicate a turn to the east. When a turn is initiated while on a northerly heading, the compass first indicates a turn in the opposite direction. If you're on a southerly heading and you make a turn to the east or to the west, the compass card will indicate correctly, but it'll indicate in advance of the actual turn. So the rule for this error is, when starting a turn from a southerly heading, the compass indication leads the turn. It indicates correctly, but it leads the turn. It indicates more than you're actually turning. The rule for the northerly turning error is, when starting a turn from a northerly heading, the compass indication lags behind the turn. The compass indication indicates incorrectly momentarily, and then it eventually catches up. Acceleration or deceleration errors occur when the aircraft is heading either east or west. It does not occur when the aircraft is heading north or south. So the acceleration and deceleration errors are only applicable when you're heading east or west. And the way to remember what the compass does is remember the acronym ANDS. ANDS. ANDS stands for accelerate north, decelerate south. If you're accelerating on an easterly or westerly heading, the compass will indicate a turn to the north. While decelerating on an easterly or westerly heading, the compass will indicate a turn to the south. The magnetic compass indications are only accurate during straight and level, unaccelerated flight. The first attitude instrument, which was originally referred to as an artificial horizon and later called a gyro horizon, is now called the attitude indicator. Its operating mechanism is a small brass wheel with a vertical spin axis, spun at high speed by either air or electricity, and the gyro is mounted on a double gimbal, which allows the aircraft to pitch and roll about the gyro as the gyro remains fixed in space. A horizon disc is attached to the gimbals so that it remains in the same place as the gyro while the aircraft pitches and rolls around it. On the earlier instruments, this horizon disc was just a bar that represented the horizon, but now it's a disc that has lines painted on it to represent both pitch and bank angle marks. The top half of the instrument dial and the horizon disc is blue, representing the sky, and the bottom half is brown or black, which represents the ground. And a bank angle index at the top of the instrument shows the angle of bank, representing 10 degrees, 20 degrees, 30 degrees, 60 degrees, and 90 degrees. Pitch angle indexes are marked, showing 5-degree increments up to 25 degrees pitch up or pitch down. What you need to know. When viewing the attitude indicator, the direction of bank is determined by the relationship of the miniature airplane to the horizon bar. The miniature airplane may be moved up or down by using an adjustment knob. Normally, the miniature airplane will be adjusted so that the wings overlap the horizon bar whenever the airplane is in straight and level flight. A magnetic compass is a dependable instrument and it's used as a backup instrument, but it has so many errors that it's been supplemented with gyroscopic heading indicators. A gyro in an attitude indicator is mounted in a double gimbal in such a way that its spin axis is vertical. It senses pitch and roll, but it cannot sense rotation about its vertical or spin axis. The gyro in a heading indicator is also mounted on a double gimbal, but its spin axis is horizontal, and it senses rotation about the vertical axis of the aircraft. Gyro heading indicators, with the exception of slave gyro indicators, are not north-seeking, and they must be set to the appropriate heading by referring to a magnetic compass. The principle of rigidity in space causes them to maintain this heading indication without the other errors inherent in the magnetic compass. The indication of the gyro will drift over a period of time. It's standard practice to reset the heading indicator to agree with the magnetic compass about once every 15 minutes during straight and level, unaccelerated flight. Attitude and heading indicators function on the principle of rigidity, but rate instruments, such as the turn and slip indicator, operate on precession. Precession is a characteristic of gyroscopes that causes an applied force to produce a movement, not at the point of application, but at a point 90 degrees from the point of application in the direction of rotation. The first gyroscopic aircraft instrument was the turn indicator in the needle and ball, or turn and bank indicator, which has more recently been called a turn and slip indicator. The turn and slip indicator is actually two instruments. There's an indicator which shows the turn, and there's also a metal ball inside of a glass tube which shows a slip or skid indication. It's called an inclinometer. And it has a black glass ball sealed inside of a curved glass tube that's partially filled with liquid, much like a magnetic compass. The ball measures the relative strength of the force of gravity and the force of inertia caused by a turn. When the aircraft is flying straight and level, there is no inertia acting on the ball, so it remains in the center of the tube between the two marks. In a turn made where the bank angle is too steep, the force of gravity is greater than the inertia and the ball rolls down to the inside of the turn. If the turn is made with too shallow a bank angle, the inertia is greater than gravity and the ball rolls upward toward the outside of the turn. The inclinometer does not indicate the amount of bank, neither is it limited to indicate indication of slip. It only indicates the relationship between the angle of bank and the rate of yaw. The turn indicator is a small gyro spun either by air or by an electric motor. The gyro is mounted inside of a single gimbal with its spin axis parallel to the lateral axis of the aircraft, and the axis of the gimbal is parallel with the longitudinal axis. When the aircraft yaws or rotates about its vertical axis, it produces a force in the horizontal plane that, due to precession, causes the gyro and its gimbal to rotate about the gimbal axis. It is restrained in this rotation by a calibration spring. It rolls just enough to cause the pointer to deflect until it aligns with one of the marks on the face of the dial, indicating a standard right turn. The dial of this instrument is marked 2-minute turn. Some turn and slip indicators used in faster aircraft are marked 4-minute turn. In either instrument, a standard rate turn is being made whenever the needle aligns with the mark. The major limitation of the older turn and slip indicator is that it senses rotation only about the vertical axis of an aircraft. It tells nothing of the rotation around the longitudinal axis, which in normal flight occurs before the airplane begins to turn. A turn coordinator operates on precession, the same as the turn indicator, but Its gimbal frame is angled upward about 30 degrees from the longitudinal axis of the aircraft. This allows it to sense both roll and yaw. Some turn coordinator gyros are dual powered and can be driven either by air or electricity. Rather than using a needle as an indicator, the gimbal moves on a dial on which is the rear view of a symbolic aircraft. The bezel of the instrument is marked to show wings level flight and bank angles for a standard rate turn. The inclinometer, similar to the one in the turn and slip indicator, is called a coordination ball, and it shows the relationship between bank angle and rate of yaw. The turn is coordinated when the ball is in the center between the marks. The aircraft is skidding when the ball rolls to the outside of the turn, and slipping when the ball rolls to the inside of the turn. The turn coordinator does not sense pitch. This is indicated on some instruments with the words "no pitch information" printed on the dial. What you need to know about a turn coordinator is the turn coordinator uses a miniature airplane to provide information concerning rate of roll and rate of turn. As the airplane enters a turn, movement of the miniature aircraft indicate rate of roll. When the bank is held constant, rate of turn is indicated. Simultaneously, the quality of the turn or movement about the yaw axis is indicated by the ball on the inclinometer. So the turn coordinator shows rate of roll while the aircraft is entering a turn, and then once the bank is held constant, the turn coordinator is showing rate of turn. All three of the pressure instruments, airspeed indicator, vertical speed indicator, and altimeter, measure pressure from the aircraft pedostatic system. Pressure of a static or still air is measured where the air is not disturbed. On some aircraft, this air is sampled by static ports on the side of the fuselage. These ports are in locations that are proven by flight tests to be in undisturbed air, and they're normally paired on either side of the aircraft. Dual location prevents lateral movements of the aircraft from giving erroneous static pressure indications. The areas around the static ports may be heated with electric heating elements to prevent ice formation. Pedo pressure, or impact air pressure, is taken through an open-end tube pointed directly into the relative wind. The pedo tube connects to the airspeed indicator and to the static ports, which deliver their pressure to the airspeed indicator, altimeter, and VSI. What you need to know about the airspeed indicator and airspeeds are terms and abbreviations. There are three different types of airspeed indications you need to know. They are indicated airspeed, which is the reading on the airspeed indicator; calibrated airspeed, which is indicated airspeed corrected for installation and instrument error; and true airspeed, which is calibrated airspeed corrected for temperature and pressure variations. You need to be able to explain the difference between indicated airspeed, calibrated airspeed, and true airspeed. Another thing you need to know is a number of airspeed limitations, abbreviated as V-speeds. Now, these are indicated by color-coded markings on the airspeed indicator. They are VSO. VSO is the stall speed, or minimum steady flight speed, in the landing configuration. It is the lower limit of the white arc on the airspeed indicator. VFE, maximum flap extended speed. This is the upper limit of the white arc on the airspeed indicator. The entire white arc on the airspeed indicator defines the flap operating range. VS1. VS1 is the stall speed, or minimum steady flight speed, in a specified configuration. This is the lower limit of the green arc on the airspeed indicator. The entire green arc on the airspeed indicator defines what's called the normal operating range. There are two more, VNO and VNE. VNO is the maximum structural cruising speed. This is the upper limit of the green arc and the lower limit of the yellow arc. The yellow arc defines what's called the caution range. This range should be avoided unless you are flying in smooth air. And VNE, never exceed speed. This is the upper limit of the yellow arc, and it's marked in red. It's the red line on the airspeed indicator. This is the speed that should never be exceeded. Now, there are other important airspeed limitations that are not color-coded on the airspeed indicator, but these are found in the pilot's operating handbook, or they're found on placards posted inside the aircraft. These important airspeed limitations are, there's only four of them. VLE, the maximum landing gear extended speed, VLE. Then there's VA, which is the design maneuvering speed. This is the speed which should be flown in rough air or if severe turbulence is encountered. The airspeed should be reduced to the maneuvering speed or less in order to minimize stress on the airplane structure. VA, design maneuvering speed. Finally, there's VX and VY. VX is the best angle of climb speed, and VY is the best rate of climb speed. VX, the best angle of climb speed, is the airspeed that will result in the most gain in altitude over a given distance traveled. VY, the best rate of climb speed, is the airspeed that will result in the most gain in altitude over a given period of time. Altitude is indicated by three hands on the face of the altimeter. The shortest hand indicates altitudes in 10,000 foot increments. The intermediate hand indicates altitude in thousands of feet. And the longest hand indicates altitude in hundreds of feet. The altimeter scale is divided into 20-foot increments. A sensitive altimeter has an adjustable knob which adjusts the barometric scale and allows you to set a reference pressure from which the altitude is measured. The scale is a small window in the altimeter. It's called a Colesman window, and it's used to adjust the barometric pressure from 28 inches to 31 inches. By rotating the knob, 1 inch of mercury will change the pointer by 1,000 feet. Altitude actually comes in 5 different flavors, and you need to know what each of them are. In fact, you need to memorize the 5 different types of altitude. They are indicated altitude, absolute altitude, true altitude, pressure altitude, and density altitude. Indicated altitude is the altitude read on the face of the altimeter after it's set to the current local altimeter setting. Absolute altitude is the height above the surface. True altitude is the height above mean sea level. Pressure altitude is the altitude that is indicated whenever the altimeter dial is set to 29.92. Density altitude is pressure altitude corrected for non-standard temperature. Let's talk about each of these altitudes. Indicated altitude is the most straightforward altitude you can have. It's just what you read on the altimeter after you set it to your local current altimeter setting. Indicated altitude, what you see is what you get, providing the altimeter is set correctly. The absolute altitude is the actual height above the surface. When your aircraft is sitting on the ground, the absolute altitude is zero. True altitude is the height above mean sea level. It's normally measured in feet. Pressure altitude is the altitude that's indicated whenever the altimeter setting is dialed to 29.92. 29.92 inches of mercury is the standard datum plane. It's a theoretical level where the air pressure is equal to 29.92 inches of mercury, or 1013.2 millibars. The standard datum plane is 29.92 inches of mercury. When the altimeter is set to 29.92 inches, it is reading pressure altitude. Density altitude is pressure altitude corrected for non-standard temperature or pressure. A standard day is a day where the atmospheric pressure happens to be 29.92 inches of mercury and the standard temperature of 15 degrees Celsius or 59 degrees Fahrenheit also happens to exist. So on a standard day, 15 degrees Celsius, 59 degrees Fahrenheit, 29.92 inches of mercury, 1013.2 millibars at sea level, the pressure altitude is the same as true altitude, is the same as indicated altitude, is the same as density altitude. Prior to takeoff, the altimeter should be set to the current local altimeter setting. This is the value at which the scale of the altimeter is set so that the altimeter indicates true altitude at field elevation. If an altimeter setting is not available, the altimeter should be set to the elevation of the departure airport. After takeoff, the altimeter should remain set to the current local altimeter setting until you climb through 18,000 feet, at which time the altimeter should be set to 29.92. To compensate for the effect of non-standard conditions, the altimeter must be set to the altimeter setting of a station within 100 nautical miles of the aircraft. There are two altimeter errors that we need to discuss. A sensitive altimeter is designed to indicate standard changes from standard conditions. But most flying involves flying in conditions that are non-standard. And therefore, you have to be able to modify the indications of your altimeter to correct for these errors. The two types of errors are mechanical and inherent. Mechanical error is simply a malfunctioning altimeter. When you do a pre-flight check, one of the things you want to do is to determine the condition of the altimeter. And you do this by setting the barometric scale to the local altimeter setting or setting the pointers to the field elevation. When you set the altimeter to the local altimeter setting, the altimeter pointers should indicate the surveyed elevation of the airport. If the indication is off by more than 75 feet, the instrument should be referred to a repair shop for recalibration. The other error is caused by differences between the ambient temperature and/or pressure. Non-standard temperatures affect the indications of an altimeter. When an airplane is flying in air that is warmer than standard, the air is less dense. The pressure levels of the air are further apart. When an aircraft is flying at an indicated altitude of 5,000 feet, the pressure level for that altitude is actually higher than it would be in air at standard temperature. In other words, the aircraft would be higher than it would be if the air were cooler. If the air is colder than standard or more dense, the pressure levels are closer together. When the aircraft is flying at an indicated altitude of 5,000 feet, its true altitude is lower than it would be if the air were warmer. In other words, if a flight is made from an area of low pressure to an area of high pressure without adjusting the altimeter will indicate lower than the actual altitude above ground level. Similarly, if the aircraft is flying in an area of low temperature and it goes to an area of high temperature, without adjusting the altimeter will indicate lower than the actual altitude above ground level. If a flight is made from an area of high pressure to an area of low pressure, without adjusting the altimeter will indicate higher than the actual altitude above sea level. Well, that can be dangerous, because if your altimeter is indicating higher than you actually are, that's bad. So the way to remember this is if a flight is made from an area of high pressure or an area of high temperature, to an area of low pressure or an area of low temperature, without readjusting the altimeter will indicate higher than the actual altitude above sea level. So if you're flying from a high to a low, look out below. From high to low, look out below. If you're flying from an area of high pressure to an area of low pressure, your altimeter is indicating artificially high. You're actually lower than the altimeter is indicating. From high to low, look out below. The reverse is also true. From low to high, I don't know what rhymes with low to high. From low to high, there's plenty of sky. I don't know. Just remember, when flying from hot to cold or high to low, look out below.